So Craig's out, so it's amateur night. If you notice, I sent an email out today. So for the people that use the YouVersion, if you open the YouVersion up on your phone and you come down to the bottom to more, and it'll give you all these things that you can choose, events, and it'll find where you are and it'll give you some options of local events. And the first one says, say, Northside Church. If you click on that, that's almost everything that I'm going to talk about. I forgot one, so it's my first time. But I thought that was kind of neat. I was on vacation, saw that. Today, I don't know why, I'm a little nervous. I'm usually not nervous with you guys, right? I'm an outgoing guy. But today, I guess I'm talking a little more personal, so maybe I'm a little nervous. That's what it is. Plus, I have notes. Normally, you guys aren't used to seeing me with notes. I talk off the hip, so that throws me off. Today, we're going to do kind of a general topic, but it's an application. In my world, everything's about application. We don't dive real deep in what I do. It's all about the application, right? Or maybe a thought process. I've just heard lately, you've heard those awful statistics. The 22 soldiers commit suicide, they give up a day. I don't know if that's real or not. That's like 8,000 per year. I'm not really sure where that number comes from. I don't know if it's a peak or an average, but it's horrible, right? It gets your attention, and it hurts to even think about it, but that's a kind of depression that takes over somebody. Those people need really professional help, you know. We live in a high anxiety and depression filled world, but on a smaller scale, yet important to my world, is my own battle with my anxiety. I realize Wednesday night class, they do really deep dive there. It's fresh on everybody's mind. But personally, if you know me well, I have this personality thing, an issue maybe. I'm not really sure what you call it, a weakness. But I have this insatiable desire to be better than what I'm doing right now. Right? Any capacity. I can't grow any taller. I can't do that. So there are some limitations, but not many in my mind, right? It's like I live in this extreme hope society. And it's my brain is like I'm in this extreme hope, right? It's like deep down inside, the greatest thing in my career, home, car, hobby, the greatest thing is just about to happen, and I may miss it, right? Is this type of hope, is it a form of faith, right? Like Hebrews 11:1, now faith is assurance of things hoped for the conviction of things not seen. You know, that says hope, so maybe it's a good thing, right? Hope's good. Sounds great at first, unless you try to live with me, right? Sounds like a wonderful, positive attitude. I'm a positive guy. And it sounds like everybody should strive to have this, right? I'm going to be better. But really, it's tiresome to most people around me. You know, people, it gets old. When you have this extreme view, when you miss it, you have the extreme downside of it. So you reach this down, this depression-y kind of thing. I don't like to use the word depression because that's more clinical. But you get this down, right? And it always feels like you're racing against this feeling. But you're always one step ahead of it. You're always just there. Not quite. It's always ready to get you. All right? So if I internalize this, a lot of it is how we think of ourselves, our self-image, right? Talking about a little bit of that this morning, about how what you call normal, our self-image, right? If somebody startles you in the middle of the night, what do you call normal? How do you picture yourself, right? I'd like to picture myself like that, right? I was cute back then, right? That's about 1975-ish, give or take a year. I had my Alabama jacket on because we lived in Tuscaloosa, you know. Doing what I did best, no cares in the world, right? That's the way I'd like to vision myself. But that's not the way I see me, right? I see me as this awkward kid, right? If you wake me up in the middle of the night, I actually still have hair in my mind, right? I look like that. That kid was horrible. He was. Awkward, wimpy, full of fear, no hope of anything. I just had to get out of Rustburg, Virginia, right? That was the deal. That's all I cared about. But this warped self-image and this extreme of hope really affects me. It's what becomes an anxiousness, like the stuff we're talking about Wednesday night in class. It's like an anxiousness on steroids. It's going to get better tomorrow, right? I can't even sleep at night because I'm going to miss something, and tomorrow it's going to be better, right? And people who've hung around me a while, you guys know this about me. Makes for funny jokes, right? But, you know, one of the things, it's all fresh in everybody's mind because of all these people that are famous. They have everything. They're chasing these dreams. And when they get there, they're committing suicide. They're having a hard time. There's really something with it. And it's fresh in our minds right now. It's hard to reconcile. If you recall, a couple Sundays back, I was talking about in 1977 when my mom was pregnant with my little brother. So we were talking about life and mortality. We had had a bunch of string of deaths in my family. And all of a sudden, Freddie Prinze hits the news. He had killed himself. And I couldn't handle that. It was weird. To this day, I remember my mom talking about that. And so, mortality was just something I didn't understand. And I've never done death well. For example, a couple weeks ago, we went to a funeral, me and Angie. Really great guy, went to a funeral. And after it's over, we're all with the family and the widow sitting around talking about all the loose ends that comes with death. You don't think about the loose ends at the time, but then all of a sudden, I mean, you're closing out things. You're talking to lawyers, talking to people. And the lady at the, you know, the widow's heartfelt, she says, "And tomorrow I got to meet with the guy talking about a headstone and footstone. I guess I got to wait for the insurance to hit all that because, you know, I got to pay for it." And I said, and me, I mean, I love the lady. I look at her and I say, "Hey, it's okay. He ain't going anywhere." Well, apparently that's not appropriate. I've never done death well. And I think it's because I have tons of deaths in my family before I was 14 and almost none since. So, you know, I just kind of stopped at the 14-year-old level. But anyway, so is this extreme hope, is it more of an anxiousness, afraid, or confused, right? Does it push me to this weird view of hope? So on Wednesday, it made me think of this one, this here, Matthew 6:25. "Therefore, I tell you, do not be anxious about your life, what will you eat or drink, nor about your body, what will you put on. Is this not life? Is not life more than food, and the body more than clothing? Look at the birds of the air. They neither sow nor reap nor gather into barns, and yet your heavenly Father feeds them. Are you not more value than they?" Okay, and that's, I understand what they're getting at, but that's been always completely lost on me. Am I cared more about the birds? Well, I used to shoot them sparrows as a kid with my BB gun, and I've seen them bang into windows in the kitchen. So I get what he's saying, but I couldn't internalize that one, right? So maybe this idea is more like being content. And so I searched around and I remember this one because this one's always kind of bothered me. Hebrews 13:5-6. "Keep your life free from love of money. Be content with what you have. I'll never leave or forsake you. So we can confidently say, Lord is my helper. I will not fear. What can man do to me?" That one's a little better, but if I'm always having trouble with this content, am I sinning? Am I having a hard time because of this anxiousness causing me to sin? So I've had a hard time reconciling with that. And then, let's see. And also at the end of that one, he has that zinger, I will not fear what can man do to me. So is this a function of fear of not being content, or is it a function of greed that you want to be more content? Reconciling that stuff. Another thing I mentioned a couple of weeks ago, I guess we were talking about back in 96, I went to an army school. And the guy standing next to me, they tore him up, got in his face and says, "Are you willing to die for your country?" And I thought to myself, that's the dumbest question in the world. I ain't gonna die for my country. I'm good, I'm gonna live, right? But I had this epiphany, this great flash of light, you know. I like movie quotes. Remember Hook? Smee says, "I had an apostrophe." Captain Hook says, "I think you mean an epiphany. Lightning has just struck my brain." Well, that must hurt, right? So I had one of those. Sitting there, I saw this guy getting chewed out, and all I could think of was, I'm not afraid to die at all. That's no big deal. But I'm afraid to fail this course. And that's when it hit me. That's the epiphany. That was it. And I fought that ever since then. I was 26, 27 back then. And for the last 29 years, I have fought that one thing. Not afraid to die. I don't even understand death. You know, I have the development of a 14-year-old for that. I'm afraid to fail. And I think that's it, right? So it sounds simple, maybe. What's pass and fail? But if I interviewed all you guys in here, you guys would have a completely different view of that. What's success, right? Some of you guys may hear that and go, "That's nothing. Give me a break." You'll grow out of it, right? But for me, it's my very core, right? And I have this incredible hope in to not allow Mr. Failure to catch me, okay? So I'm sure everybody's got their own little internal demons, their own little pass-fail mechanisms, right? Their own Mr. Failure chasing you down. So what I wanted to do is go real simply. My little four things that I do, and I have to do it all the time, because if I get out of sync, everybody around me, I can tell it. So I'm gonna show you what I have to do to balance this and to fight Mr. Fear of Failure, right? So number one, nothing is so serious that it overcomes our living. We just read Galatians 2:20. Chris did for us, "I have been crucified with Christ. It's no longer I who live, but Christ who lives in me. The life I now live in the flesh, I live by the faith in the Son of God who loved me and gave himself for me." I can't read that without singing it, right? Everybody in here in their brain, crucified, right? So it's one of those where our lives are actually larger than us now. We've chosen for our lives to be larger than us. We asked for it. We've asked for Christ. Now, it means that lives are bigger than us. Good, bad, happy, or sad, we're including Christ with it now. So there's bigger than me, right? And we're a team. We're not alone. All right. So, number two, the second, you're not alone. So don't be. Right? If you need something, you've got to seek it out, because you're not alone. You got to open your eyes and realize you're not alone. Right? You got to seek it. So 2 Corinthians 1:6-7, there's a bunch of these, but this one was one that just popped in my head when I was thinking about it. "If we're afflicted, it's for your comfort and salvation. If we're comforted, it is for your comfort, which you experience when you patiently endure the same sufferings that we suffer. Our hope is for you is unshaken, for we know as you share in our sufferings, you will also share in our comfort." This passage is part of the initial greetings of Paul to the Corinthians for that second letter. So basically, God suffers, we suffer. God comforts, we comfort, right? So you're not alone. I'm not saying that we as Christians are willing or ready, prepared to give mental health guidance and support. I'm not saying that. We're not taking that step, right? But I am saying that we as Christians need to realize that this gives us a commonality, to be able to speak, to bond, to be a family, okay? And to be able to ask for help. So back when the kid with the hair, right, back then, I was in high school. I moved my junior year in high school from a city to middle of nowhere, Rustburg, Virginia, right? Big Louisville, little Rustburg. In the big city, nobody in class had a beard. In little Rustburg, I couldn't grow a beard, and all the big boys had them, right? It was just different world. I started wrestling because I thought it'd be cool. I was horrible. Braces, blood, mat burns. It was just terrible. I was the worst. I had to lose 5 pounds below cross country weight. So I was already skinny, and I had to lose 5 pounds more. And that was just terrible. Then I fell bird dogging some girl, and she's an absolutely awful human being. I think she's a little better now. She's one of my Facebook friends, if you guys want to look through. But she public humiliated me just day in, day out. It was just routine. And I fell into this awful funk, and I needed help. At this age, I can look back and go, I needed help. I needed more than what I could get on my own. And for us here, when we reach into those funks, we need to be able to say, I need help, right? And at that time in my life, I actually, I pondered what death would be. I pondered what it would be to take my own life. And I never planned anything, but it was very serious to me. And for that reason, in my family, we don't joke about that at all. There's no, ha, 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 I could kill myself. No, we don't do that, ever. And nobody around me gets away with doing that without me jumping in on it. Because it's that serious. But, don't feel sorry for me. I mean, obviously I turned out okay. My parents love me. They still worship the ground I walk on. They think I'm practically perfect in every way. So it's not any of that. But they didn't know how to step in or even how or why to step in or how to. Okay? We need to be a commonality to the point that we can look at each other and go, something's wrong. Let's step in and be their friend. Again, not to be a mental health provider, that's not our role, but that is important to me that we should be like that, right? For me, what got me out of it was that idea of commonality. That was a year later, right? I had a little brother and a little sister. I was a role model. Somebody needed me, right? So when you get into that position, you've got to be somebody. You got to realize that somebody needs you. You're not alone. We're not built to be alone. We're not alone. All right? That was about a year later, I guess. 2 years later. So, number three of my everyday reminder. Matthew 25, 34 through 40. And the king will say to those on his right, come you who are blessed by my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world. For I was hungry, you gave me food. I was thirsty, you gave me me drink. I was a stranger, and you welcomed me. I was naked, and you clothed me. I was sick, and you visited me. I was in prison, and you came to me. And the righteous will answer him, saying, Lord, when did we see you hungry and feed you, or thirsty or give you drink? When did we see you a stranger and welcome you, or naked or clothe you? When did we see you sick or in prison or visit you? And the king will answer them, truly I say to you, as you did it to one of the least of these, my brothers, you did it to me. As fellow Christians, we can't walk by. We have to help each other. We are a group. We are a family. And it's in here, we're small enough, I feel like a family to most everybody here, right? I mean, you guys know me pretty well. That same time period when I was hitting my low in high school after that move, I remember there's a particular event that I remember that kind of was a good turning point in my life, and probably why. I mean, you just remember things, right? I had a particularly miserable, embarrassing wrestling match. I remember it. I remember it to this day. And I remember coming home, getting through it, go to the locker room, get home, and I cried like a baby. I was just tore up. And the assistant coach was a student at Liberty right down the road. Liberty University, and he was a student assistant coach. This guy didn't like me. He didn't dig me at all. He didn't care about me one way or the other, but he saw that I needed help. He saw that something was wrong with me. So that night, he drove past, came to my house, sat in my den, and waited for me to come downstairs and in my den with my mom and dad, and just hung out. That's all. No epiphanies, no great big thing, nothing. He supported. He was also, as a Liberty guy, he was our, went to the Baptist church. He was our youth director. So he knew me enough that he knew something was wrong. And the act of doing that set me on a good path. I made better decisions after that. Not, he didn't do any great knowledge, no nothing. He supported. He did not walk by. All right. He's a preacher now. We happened to go to his church a couple weeks ago on our vacation. That's where I got the YouVersion idea. Yeah, interesting how time does that, right? And the fourth one is be thankful. Be thankful. You can read a bunch of these. Colossians 3, 12 and 17. This one didn't make the YouVersion app. Messed that up. But put on then as God's chosen one, holy and beloved, compassionate hearts, kindness, humility, meekness, and patience, bearing one another. And if one of has a complaint against another, forgiving each other as the Lord has forgiven you. So you must also must forgive. And above all else, put on love, which binds everything together in perfect harmony. Let the peace of Christ rule in your hearts, to indeed you are called in one body, and be thankful. Let the word of Christ dwell in you richly, teaching and admonishing one another in all wisdom, singing songs, hymns, spiritual songs, thankfulness in your hearts. Whatever you do in word or deed, do everything in the name of the Lord, giving thanks to God the Father through him. He's speaking to, he's closing up a letter. He's speaking to a group and saying, hey guys, you're in this together. And not only are you in it together, be thankful you are, right? Be thankful. A couple years back, some of you may recall, I love New Year's resolutions. I hate birthdays. I love New Year's resolutions. That's just me. And one of them was to be more thankful. So I go, I'll make a point once or twice a week. Make sure that waitress or that person, store clerk, that I tell them, hey, thank you very much. And I'm so not used to it in today's society. That you go, well, I'm sorry. Hey, thank you. It really helped out. Yeah, I'll even blush a little because I'm just not used to it. And if they messed up my food, I got you right now. You brought me Diet Pepsi instead of Diet Coke. It's on. Hey, wow. I appreciate that. You just feel, I get a little flush right now thinking about it because it's just outside of our norm. And we got to break that habit. And we've got to be thankful of everything we have. Because when you think of all these, the top 1% does this, top 1% does that. We're top 1% of the world. We have more than we could ever imagine, right? And we have to stop and be thankful. So I'm going to look at a couple things here. Summary of what I just said. Nothing is so serious it overcomes your living, right? We're to live for Christ. We're not to die for Christ, right? The soldier lives for America. He doesn't die for America. It's a bad way of thinking. You're not alone. We're a group. We're a family. We're a commonality, right? And as a fellow Christian, you cannot walk by. You must step in. You must see and look at somebody and say, hey, they need that help. Because you may be that assistant wrestling coach that don't even like the kid and shows up at his mama's house. You may be the key, all right? And then be thankful. If you do these four things, maybe things won't develop and bother you as bad. So let's just have a practical exercise. Okay, so I'm going to apologize to you guys because I owe you guys an apology. I really do. And as soon as I mention a little bit, you go, oh yeah. So everybody in here has heard me whine all spring about my career path. Everybody in here has heard it at least once or twice. Now, I'm sorry. I really am. So if you look at the examples I had just then, and you go down the list as from the perspective of how I let myself get into a funk this spring. And those who know me knew I was in some kind of funk. You know, Craig is my buddy. He could tell something was weird. And for people who don't know, the one or two bodies in here, I missed a promotion this spring. I've been promised for 3-4 years now. I've only been to the company 5 about how I'll take this one slot. It's all set up. Can you handle it? You know, had to play the man card, right? Can you handle it? And then all of a sudden, my boss retires, and they say, okay, the slot's gone. It's not going to exist. You know, we're just letting it die with him. Well, that went my career path, because I'm a staffer. There's no up, you know. I'm on my own, and I'm in my 40s. I'm not in my 70s like my counterpart is. You know, what am I going to do? So I chose to whine about it, and I whined to nearly all of you. I'm sorry about that. So number one, if we think of it as not so serious, it overcomes our living. Never got to that point. I was in the mad stage. I didn't get depressed. I got down, but not bad. So we don't have to worry about that part. Number two, though, I felt alone. It's hard to describe what I do to people anyway. People don't understand my job. There's nobody I can go talk to. I can't grab Doug and go, hey, man. Hey, because Doug's like, hey, man, you're in a different stage of life. What are you talking about? I got kids. All right? So I felt alone. And I felt really alone. I see younger people around me getting promoted. You know, guys that are younger than me are like jumping way on up, and you go, how did that happen, right? We're a big company. Surely there's one of those spots for me. So then I kind of took it internal. Number three, don't walk on by. Well, what I did was, there's a whole string of young engineers, young people that I help, and they are asking me career advice, and I was snotty with them. Who cares? Look what they're doing to me, right? That's terrible. It's terrible. And then number four, I wasn't thankful. Mickey was scrounging for a job, and I'm over there with the greatest job I had in my life, and I'm like, who cares? You know, I wasn't thankful at all. I was the opposite of thankful. I was ungrateful, right? I was bitter to everybody. I was bitter to Angie, bitter to the family, and I was bitter to a lot of you guys. You may call that normal, and I feel really bad about that. So for that, I'm sorry. But to get out of it, let's go back down the same list. First off, I remembered that my career isn't my family. My career is actually in Atlanta. It's not even in Knoxville. And I live in Knoxville, right? I'm not going to live in a box. I'm going to be okay. You know, so what's really important here? Number two, I quit being alone. I took Angie on a trip, get away from it all. I went fishing with Craig. That was good. Hung out with a girl some. Just had vacation, hung out with my brother. He always puts the reality in things. He's pretty even keel. So I quit being alone. That's a big deal. And then number three, don't walk on by. It's the summer. We've just got a whole new influx of young engineers, a whole new influx of interns, and they eagerly come up to me like, wow, do I need to do this for my career? Can I help with this? And you look at them, and instead of being cynical, I looked at them and go, yes, I got something for you. Hey, that's right. Matter of fact, I can connect you to this person. That's what you need to do. I took it outside of me and put back and helped the others, right? And number four, I made a point to see how blessed I am and thankful I am. I'm not, you know, our company now is 44,000 people, and I'm a stray staffer. Well, I'm not a stray staffer, okay? I counted up. There's if you count accounting and safety and procurement as standalone unit processes, there's only 17 processes to run a complete paper mill, paper company. and I am the proponency of one of them. One of them, if anybody does anything, they ask my permission. Out of 44,000 people. And the title is stupid. Doesn't make sense. But the power is great. Here I am complaining. I'm just being a whiner. But I'm thankful. I have everything I've always asked for. I've got two boats now. I've got everything a man could have, right? Two boats, a pretty wife, and a nice house. I mean, so I had to stop and be thankful. So in other words, I have a great job. So I wanted to take this opportunity to just give that talk, more of an apology if anything else, but more so you can get into the mindset of what it takes for somebody like me and my extreme hope to not let it get out of hand. And if anybody needs help, surely go get it, whether it be us or whether it be mental health or any of those other things, because we don't want to be a statistic. We don't want to have that within our church. We want to reach out, and we want to be the family that we are. On a closer, or on the Sunday morning aspect, if we have anything we need to pray for, or if we have anything that we'd like to support or any of those things, now be the time as we sing the song selected.